Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Here's where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast, a part of the Peristyle Podcast family show. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my co-host, Jack Smith. Jack, how are we doing today?
Doing very well, Shotgun. Going to recap a good week for USC baseball, and there have been some great ones. I would say this is a good one.
It was an interesting week for sure. They had a big opportunity. They took care of that in the midweek, and then not as much on the weekend, and there were some missed opportunities there. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. To let any of our first-time listeners know, Jack and I are here on the Dado Download Podcast talk about the USC Trojans baseball program, a team that is synonymous with winning national championships, though that was a long time ago. It's been a long time. So this team is building. The program is being rebuilt by Andy Stankiewicz in their second season. The Trojans got off to a slow start this season, but have started playing better baseball recently. And though we were wondering if we should count them out, is this season already over before the halfway point? They have turned things on. They had, we've talked about it on previous episodes, but they had a huge weekend, sweeping two games against Oregon State. They have won against UC Irvine this past week, so that's three top 25 wins right there. And then they just went on the road to Oregon to play another top 25 team. They got another win there, went 1-2 on the weekend, but we'll talk about that in a second. Jack, I got to ask you, though. What was it like for you to avoid all the weather? Because I was there on Saturday and it was pouring rain. It was not baseball weather at all. I'm very disappointed in the West Coast for not treating me well when it comes to baseball weather when I come out. But you got to avoid everything. You stayed home in Southern California and enjoyed, I think there was a little rain down there as well, but not the downpour that it was that they played through on Saturday.
Well, I was in San Luis Obispo this weekend, and it poured, I think, probably just as much as it did in Oregon. It really never let up, and I was there this entire summer. I've been there at many different points, and I've never seen it rain so hard. It sucked. The weather app said it was supposed to be sunny and between 75 and 80 like it was during the week, and then just rained all weekend. Like, I just don't trust meteorologists at this point.
Yeah, actually, I usually do not check the weather apps and stuff when I'm going anywhere. But since I was going to the Pacific Northwest, I was like, is it going to rain? Am I going to be able to get these games in that I was going to? I bounced around. I went to a Portland-San Diego game on Friday, went to USC and Oregon on Saturday, then drove to Corvallis after that game to catch the tail end of Oregon State-Stanford, and then went up to Seattle to catch UCLA and Washington. So we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I got a chance to see six of the Pac-12 teams. That's more than half the teams, because, Jack, there's only 11 teams in the Pac-12, because Colorado is not at baseball. Come on, Colorado, get with the program. But it was an interesting weekend for me to be able to see half the Pac-12 and see, you know, where teams are kind of standing right now. I've seen each of these teams earlier this season, except for Oregon and Washington. So I've seen four of the teams previously. So to get to see them a second time, see where they're standing, you know, as we're kind of halfway into the conference stretch, and, you know, USC and Oregon go into this weekend and both of them are a half game out of first place. Oregon State is, you know, tied for first place going on the weekend. They are now officially in first place, I believe, if I remember correctly. They went 2-1 against Stanford this weekend. Arizona was the other team tied for first place. They did not have a conference weekend. They were off this weekend, so they played Louisiana Tech and swept them. Arizona's playing great baseball right now. They've won 11 in a row. But let's talk about the Trojans. What did they do this weekend? You know, recap the week for us. They go 2-2 on the week, but it's better than that record ends up looking when you just look at it at that at face value.
Yeah, we talked about it last week that this might be outside of that week where they went to Globe Life, the toughest schedule for USC, like in a given week. They had to play number 12 UCI on Tuesday. That was a home game, but at Page Stadium in Westchester. And then they go on the road to face a top 20 Oregon team. So all four of the games against ranked opponents, their first trip outside of California in a couple months, basically, since they were out in Texas. And that week was a big one when they played TCU twice and Texas A&M once, the new number one team in the country. But this week, the schedule was brutal. So I think going 2-2 in the week is a net positive. Now we're going to talk about it later because of the 3-11 start. It probably does a little bit of damage to USC, but they got two top 20 wins. They did lose twice to Oregon, but even though they went 2-2, I thought we saw them compete in their two losses, come up a little bit short, but play well, like kind of play on the par of Oregon, but not quite get that one hit that pushed them over the edge. So, you know, they went 2-2, but given the competition, I think that's a positive. And given the way that they played in the losses, I think you could have seen this week be a 3-1 week. And then we'd be talking about it like a big win given the teams that they were playing against.
Yeah, definitely. So they start out playing against UCI. Jump out immediately. This is the way you go in. You set the tone. You're coming off a sweep of Washington. You had the Oregon State, but we go, okay, we'll see how they do. Midweek is not somewhere where they have, you know, they've excelled necessarily. They've been up and down a little bit this season. They put it on Irvine. Now Irvine had came into this game 24-4. So this is a team that does not lose much this season. USC scores 9 runs in the first 2 innings. They knock out the starter before he even records an out. 3 hits, 2 walks, and they all 5 of those guys end up coming around to score. So they score 6 in the first, 3 in the second, take a 9-2 lead, and kind of cruise throughout the rest of the game, and were able to get that win. Got some guys some opportunities. We saw Deuce Robinson get in at bat. We saw, you know, some pitchers that we normally would not see in there. Sax Mattson gets in there, Andrew Harbor. Saw Brock Blatter get back out there. So that was a positive as well, even though the results were a little bit up and down there. But I think it was great for them. Not only do you beat a ranked opponent and show what you can do, but now you get some of your young guys in there and give them an opportunity to say, hey, I played against a top 25 team, a top 15 team, and get them a little bit more confidence going as well. You had home runs from Ethan Hedges, Ryan Jackson, Dean Carpentier. So, you know, it was just an all-around great game for USC. You know, the fact that you're able to get so many people in there, you get the big win. And also, you know, at D1 Baseball, we have this new metric. It's not the RPI. We're trying to kind of replace the RPI. We're trying to come up with an alternative, at least, called a Diamond Sports Ranking. And one of the things in the DSR is that it takes into account who you're playing, when you're playing them. You know, is it a midweek versus a weekend? There's some small percentages that it includes that, but it also includes margin of victory. Like when you beat up on a ranked team, like that should stand out, you know, more than, hey, you won 17-1 against a team that is, you know, against Maryland Eastern Shore, who is currently like 0-24 right now. I feel so bad for them. They're still winless. I think they're the only team remaining that's winless. And unfortunately, just because that's in my area, I look through their box scores every time. They've had like 4 games where they've blown it in the 9th inning or 8th inning. So unfortunate for them. One of them was like 6 runs too. Oh. It's not like USC's playing them. You're playing UC Irvine. You're playing a team that is playing great baseball, and you put it on them. That stands out some more. So USC's actually climbed in the DSR pretty good as well. We'll talk about where they stand as far as those rankings, the RPI, in a little bit. But then they go to Oregon. Like you said, challenge. You haven't been outside of the state of California. You're going on the road. USC, remember, struggled on the road so much last season. and go up to Oregon, and it's just a really good baseball series. You know, USC loses the first game 4-1. It was 3-1 late. Most importantly, it was almost 4-3. Jacob Galloway hits a ball to center field, and Bryce Betcher, the linebacker for Oregon, who also plays center field for them, races back, leaps up, and steals the home run. Home run robbery there, game-changing play. Or maybe even weekend-changing, because USC could have built on that momentum maybe going through. But USC, just only 5 hits. They didn't hit very well this weekend. They were able to produce better on Sunday, though. Even though they didn't get a ton of hits, they were able to maximize their opportunities. On Saturday, so they lose 4-1. I'm there on Saturday. It is raining nonstop. I just looked through the was looking at the box score, and Todd Miles, who's the SID up there, always put something interesting for the weather. And the in the column on the box score, the weather in the box score, it says that the animals were lining up 2x2 in reference to Noah's Ark, because it was pouring the entire game. Like, they moved the game back about 90 minutes from the original start time because there's supposed to be a let up, and it never let up. And that was very hard early, softened a little bit, but it was just raining the entire time. It was not baseball weather. And you saw some, it looked like a game that was played in rain, because there was just some mistakes from both teams. Oregon, give them credit, they out-executed USC. They ran a double squeeze play and executed it to perfection, and that ended up being the difference in that game. Oregon wins that one 5-3. They scored 4 runs in 1 inning, and that was it. USC's bullpen was really good after that. But, USC had some early opportunities, couldn't fully capitalize, had a 3-1 lead, but then late, 7th inning, they had 2 runners on. 8th inning, they had 2 runners on. 9th inning, they had bases loaded. Could not get a run home in any of those 3 innings. So that was a huge missed opportunity for them there. And I thought that was going to bleed into Sunday, to be honest. The way that they lost that game with so many opportunities. Like, Andy Stankiewicz, when I talked to him afterwards, was kind of, I think the word I used was crestfallen. You could feel the weight of that loss on him after the game, because he knew that there were chances there that they could have, if they played a little bit better, to get that win to even the series. So now you're going into Sunday, potentially being swept on the road, but USC was able to find a way to get the win in that one. They fall behind 2-0 early, but then Austin O'Vern gets a home run for them. And then the 6th inning, they're able to take advantage of some mistakes by Oregon. Oregon has a couple hit by pitches. They had an error. USC turns into 2 runs to take the lead. Late in the game, they add an extra run. But William Watson was really good. He's 95-97, I was told. The slider was really good. Oregon's scouting report going in was, just look for fastball. Don't worry about the slider. He's not going to be able to throw the slider for strikes. And he threw both pitches for strikes really well. He had 3 walks in the game, but over 5 innings, that's really good for him. I thought the little bit I saw a good portion of the first 3 innings before the game I was going to. But he looked really good. And that's a very impressive thing for USC. That could be a big feather in their cap going forward because of the issues they've had with starting rotation. But the bullpen was really good again, and they get a 4-2 win that gives them some momentum going forward. After what could have been a disastrous week where you're fighting so hard right now, you put yourself in such a big hole that you're fighting. And if you take that punch, is it just going to knock you out? Like, you're so exhausted. If you take that one big punch, is it going to, and instead they bounce back. So I was really impressed the fact that they found a way to win on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot that, they went through the whole week. Back to start with UC Irvine, just kind of a quick note about that. I just thought it was so impressive that their ability to pile on. Sometimes we see teams put a couple runners on in the first, but then they don't get, that one hit, or they don't get a second one. USC's first 7 hitters all reached. They took advantage of walks. They pounded extra base hits, and yeah, they let up kind of through the rest of the game, but they hung 12 runs on a top 12 team. That was a huge performance. And like you mentioned about the weekend, I do think it was so impressive with the ability to, even though they lost the first 2 games, and it was kind of a demoralizing first 2, you could have seen them come out and lay an egg on Sunday just because of the feeling after the first 2 games of the series, but they are able to grab that win. And I thought that was really impressive because, Shotgun, how many times did we see them go on the road last year, play well, but not win the first couple games, mm-hmm. and then come out and get swept on a Sunday on the road specifically? You think back to that Oregon State series. They lose in the 13th inning, 2-3 on Saturday, then they lose by 3 on Sunday. They get swept. They go to to Washington. They lose 14 to 12 in the 10th inning on Friday. They lose a one-run game on Saturday. Then they lose by three on Sunday. They get swept. This time they're able to right the ship, and though they only went 1-2 and they're not playing as well on the road as they did to start the season, to be able to get that one win is so big because this team can't afford to be swept right now. And I think they knew that, and they came out and knew that they had played pretty well on Friday and Saturday, and they were able to kind of stick that flag and get the win on Sunday.
Yeah, great point there about the comparison from this year last year. Well, let's take a look at where USC stands right now. They are 17-18 overall. They did get to 500 briefly for the first time this season after that win against UC Irvine. Drop back down. They're one game below 500. Obviously, you have to be 500 to be an at-large team. So that is important in one regard as they are continuing to try to climb their way out of that hole. But they're 10-7 overall in the Pac-12. They're tied with Utah a game and a half out of first place behind, I believe, Oregon State is there. And then I believe USC is tied for fourth right now. They've won 9 of 12. That looked better last week on a 7-8. But if you looked at this team the last 20 games or so, you'd say that is a regional caliber team. That is a team that can make some noise in a regional. Now we got to see if USC can climb their way out of the hole to be able to give themselves an opportunity to do that. They are now below 500 on the road, though. They fall to 6-7. They also are, 0-6, I think it is, in neutral site games. So not a great record away from home, quote unquote, air quotes here, because they've won 8 straight home games, but not everything's an away game. So I don't know that it really is that significant that they're doing that. They're making Great Park their friendly confines, which is the positive, because this week they will play 4 of their 5 games there. They will play all 5 games in Irvine. However, 4 of them will be home games. One of them will be an away at UC Irvine. They're playing at Great Park on Tuesday, because Loyola, normally they've been playing their games at Page Stadium at Loyola Marymount. Loyola has a game on Tuesday, so that's why the game is being shifted down to Great Park. So anyone who's trying to come out, you're going to have to go down to Irvine for that. Jack, what about their metrics as far as the NCAA is going to look at them? Shrink the schedule, RPI, DS, where are the Trojans sitting at right now?
Well, I don't think that either of us are surprised to see the strength of schedule is one of the toughest in the country. Right now, it's the 25th hardest in NCAA. So we've seen them play some really good teams. We mentioned earlier in the show that Texas A&M is now the number one team in the country. USC lost to them. TCU has fallen, but when USC played TCU, TCU was one of the best teams in the country. We've seen them play Oregon State, a top team. We've seen them play UC Irvine, a top team. Now this series lost to Oregon and an Arizona team that has jumped into the rankings, as well as shocking some of these other teams that we've talked about. Hey, they're not big names. They're good teams. Portland is a really good baseball team. San Diego is a really good baseball team. So they have played some very tough teams. And because the record is below 500, it's not going to, I don't think, the RPI reflect what could have been if USC had gotten wins against these top teams. But right now, the RPI is at 77. It's a big jump, up 21 spots since last week. So even despite the 2-2 week, the metrics really love USC right now.
Yeah, they have climbed up the RPI. When you went on the road and you went against a quality team, it's going to really jump you. They are the game on Sunday, when they won that, they climbed 19 spots after that one win itself. The win over UC Irvine is a big win for them. So like I said, at D1 Baseball, we're trying to provide an alternative to the RPI because everyone has a lot of issues with the RPI. But the Trojans and the DSR are now currently at, 57, after this weekend. It's kind of around where they were going into the weekend. But let's look back to where they were before they played against Oregon State. And that game was on a Friday, the 28th, 29th of March. USC, I'm going to have to pull this up even deeper because I was showing just 100 entries, and USC's not in the top 100 here. So the Trojans at that time were all the way down at number, survey says, they were in the top 197. So they've climbed over 40 spots and have continued to make their way up. And, they're doing what they have to do. You win on the road, you win against quality opponents. And the positive thing for USC is they have played the top 3 teams in the conference. Now, they don't have the tiebreaker against Arizona. They do not have the tiebreaker against Oregon. So that's going to hurt them as far as the potential Pac-12 standings in the seeding of the tournament. But they played the toughest teams. The only team they have remaining on the schedule is Utah, that is ahead of them or tied with them. So everyone else is below them. They're all winnable games. The Trojans just have to take care of business. Now, that's going to be the big question. But if they continue to play baseball like they're capable of and like they have recently, I think that they have an opportunity to make some noise. So we'll see if they can actually continue to do that. Actually, I looked one day too far in advance. USC was 124 in the DSR before they played Oregon State. So I was, because I forgot it was the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. So they were 124. So they have jumped, what is that, almost 70 spot, or yeah, almost 70 spots in, you know, 3 weeks. So they can continue to climb, and we'll see if the committee uses the DSR at all, if they look at it or not. But I think that is, it's a metric we think gives a little bit more accurate representation and shows, especially when you look at some teams. I was just talking with a coach before we went on, who asked me, how the hell, and this is notable since it's USC, how the hell is Notre Dame still in the top 40 in the RPI when they are, I believe it is 2-16 in conference play. Maybe it's 2-13. They are just all have been awful in ACC play, and yet they're still up at the top of these rankings because they played away games. And not that they're winning away games, but because they played them. That's all that really matters. Sometimes in the RPI, they're playing quality teams on the road. It doesn't matter that they're not winning any of these games. And the fact that they are 0-15 against teams in the top 100 in the RPI, but they're still sitting at number 40. So that's where we go. RPI's got some issues. And so we'll see if there's a slight lean away from the RPI. Last year when they went through and the bubble teams, especially because there was some bids lost at the very end, they went straight RPI, and that killed USC, killed UC Irvine, and it was not very fair, and they got shafted, but that's the way it is. We'll see if there's any different this year, some different committee members and whatnot. But the Trojans playing good baseball, can they continue it? Let's look at our three up, three down. What do you got for this week? You want to start, Jack? You know, I know you didn't get to see as much of the action this week. I obviously was up there in Eugene to see them on Saturday. You were down in Irvine. Were you down in, or over at Great Park on Tuesday?
It was a Page Stadium on Tuesday. Yep.
Yeah. So we each got to see one game this week, and then watch you know, as much as we could on the streams and whatnot. You know, what stands out to you about this week of action for the Trojans?
Yeah, I'll give you a little butter knife first. You know, one up and one down. I would say one of the one ups is legitimacy. I think going 2-2 on this really tough week and getting that Sunday win and getting a pile on win on Tuesday, that proved to me that this little run that the team had been on wasn't a fluke. It was legit, because they competed against two of the best teams in the country and could have come out with an even better record. And the difference between this year and some of the, you know, the losses on the road last year in conference, or, you know, to Auburn, they didn't get blown out against Oregon. They kept it close, and it felt like maybe they were one or two hits away from going 4-0 this week or 3-1 this week. But one of my one downs is at-large chances. We mentioned last week, USC can only afford to lose a couple of games if they want to really have a good shot to make the NCAA tournament. So because of the slow start, this positive 2-2 week kind of in a vacuum as a whole is a blow to the at-large chances for the season.
Yeah. If they could have won the series at Oregon, like I said, they jumped 19 spots in the RPI with one win from where they were on Saturday going into Sunday. So if they could have gotten, you know, the series, and it was there, it was definitely a possibility for them. So, you know, it's going to be tough for them to continue. They've got 11 game or 21 games remaining. Their current RPI, we have it at 77 on D1 Baseball. To make the top 45, they're basically going to have to win 17 games or so. You know, so can they go 17-4? Yeah, it's possible. But it becomes much more difficult when you're not playing the top teams in your conference to make those bigger jumps. So, you know, there was a big opportunity this weekend. The schedule does get easier, but that also puts more impetus on, you got to be able to win those games. So if they can get in the top 45, they will be an at-large team. If they go 17-4 the rest of the way, they're an at-large team for sure. And they may end up winning the Pac-12 at that rate. So, but we'll see what they can do. You know, it all starts this week. They do not play in the Pac-12 this week. This is their week off. And they have a unique kind of weekend schedule where they're going to play two games against Santa Clara, or excuse me, two games against Sacramento State, and then one game against Santa Clara. Santa Clara, I believe, is just coming down for Saturday. And they're going to play a doubleheader, again, one game against USC, one game against Sacramento State, and that's going to be their weekend. So I don't know what went into that decision, why they didn't decide to try to play another game in the mix there, but that's what they're going to be doing. For my three up, the bullpen. The bullpen was outstanding. Outside of, I believe, Sax Mattson, I think that was his first appearance, correct, Jack?
It was, yeah. And, you know, we said it on the student radio broadcast that after that, you know, the career can only go up. He got a couple of the big flies out of the way. I think he gave up two home runs in his first inning. And so it can only go up, and a little bit of that freshman growing pains for him. But hey, you'd rather have it come in a game like that than an important one.
Yeah, so he gives up two runs, but seven innings of the bullpen on Tuesday against UC Irvine, and that's the only runs that they give up, or only earned runs that they give up. The Xavier Martinez was really good on Friday. Tyler Stromsborg was really good to start with, but Xavier Martinez comes in, finishes it off. A little bit shaky, gave up an unearned run with the help of a couple walks. The bullpen on Saturday, the game I saw, now Fisher Johnson took the loss. He gave up two runs. Those were both on the double squeeze. So it's not like he got hit hard or anything, you know, and part of the reason why Coach Mark Wasikowski said after the game is that because he knew Fisher Johnson was going to throw strikes, he's a sinker baller, so the ball is going to be down. And that's part of the reason why they ran that play. But, you know, I thought he was still good. And then Brody Parcell was outstanding behind him. And then on Sunday, Ficus Martinez Blum, you get exactly what you want. You got five innings out of William Watson. And you're like, okay, that's great. And then you go 2-1-1. And that's the way that USC would line it up any day on a Sunday if they can get Ficus for two, Martinez for one, and Blum for one. And that's exactly how it lined up. And that, you know, that played out exactly how USC would want. Four innings pitch, two hits, and USC slides through it. So I thought the bullpen was outstanding this weekend, or this week entirely.
Yeah, and I'm going to focus on one arm shotgun, because we've talked about some of these other guys throughout the season. We've talked about Ficus. We've talked at length about Martinez and Blum, but I kind of wanted to single in on Brody Purcell. He is one of my one-ups. I've been really impressed with him over the last couple of weeks, and he has pitched very well, but the thing that has stuck out to me the most is just how much trust Andy Stankiewicz is building in him. I remember seeing him against Texas A&M back at Globe Life Field, and the fans were kind of getting in his head when they were doing their ball, whatever, chant, and he went on the shelf for a little bit, didn't pitch. He was kind of at that back part of the bullpen that Andy Stankiewicz didn't trust as much, but he's really pitched a lot lately and pitched really well. He's made seven appearances in the last 13 games. That goes back to March 26th against Fresno State. Five of those seven appearances have been scoreless. He's gone 12 and two-thirds, given up six hits, five walks, but just three earned runs and 11 strikeouts. This week specifically, he struck out the side against UCI in the ninth inning and then went eight up, eight down on Saturday versus Oregon. This is an arm that I don't think we expected to be a big impact this year, but it's one of the ones where every year a freshman or some other player that hasn't gotten some run is going to break out over the season. And I think Brody Purcell is becoming that arm for USC.
I also had an up on Tyler Stromsborg. I just mentioned him, but the fact that Caden Aoki, I talked with Andy Stankiewicz this weekend. They thought he was going to be available for the weekend. He threw during the week and kind of had a little tiny setback, and so they didn't travel him. They just want to give him an extra week. They want to make sure he's ready to go down the stretch. So they moved Stromsborg up, and they moved Hammond into Saturday, and Hammond still had some consistency issues. Stromsborg was really good. You know, he lost that game going against R.J. Gordon, but, you know, one swing of the bat or one miscatch, if Bryce Betcher doesn't catch that ball, then USC's up and Stromsborg gets the win. I thought he pitched really well, and Andy Stankiewicz was very happy with the way he pitched as well. He seems to have found his groove, and I think that's huge for USC because he can be that Friday guy for him. He was last year and can give you that consistency to go 7-8 innings to set your bullpen up for the rest of the weekend. So I thought it was really big for him to have another good outing back-to-back-to-back now.
Yeah, and I think that you're starting to see, and we've talked about it for the last couple of weeks, the innings number and kind of the ladder of this bullpen shakeout. You've got Blum for the ninth, Martinez, they'd like to get the seventh and the eighth. You know, if Fikas gets pushed back because of Stromsburg and Hammond coming out, then he could be back in that back end of the of the bullpen as well. If they trust Brody Purcell and Michael Ebner and Fisher Johnson to get multiple innings of work in, I think you're seeing a very strong bullpen. And Chuck, I think it's pretty ironic and very funny that earlier in the year we said starting pitching, biggest strength of the team, bullpen, biggest question mark. Right now, I think you'd say the bullpen is maybe the biggest strength of this team, and the starting pitching is the biggest question mark.
Yeah, the depth has really stood out. I had a coach recently tell me that he was surprised by how many arms they had and the quality of their arms. You know, it was more than he was anticipating. So, I think exactly what you mentioned, that it's been flipped on its head a little bit there. But Stromsburg is giving the starting pitching a boost for sure. Can they get Eric Hammond going? Can they get Kei Naoki back? William Watson was really good on Sunday too. That's a huge momentum boost for him, I think, giving him some confidence. And, you know, if he can become a guy that gives you five on Sundays, you know, especially if the bullpen has been rested, like, you feel really comfortable with that. Five and two runs on a Sunday, you'll take that. I think USC would take that every week possible, because they feel like their offense is going to score more than two runs. And you're going to turn the ball over to Fikas, Martinez, and Blum to get you the final 12 outs, and you feel really confident in those guys to be able to do that as well. My final three up was Ethan Hedges. You know, we've talked about Austin O'Vern getting going and that kind of being a catalyst for the rest of the team. When I talked to Travis Jewett, I talked to him before the UCLA series, and I kind of was picking his brains, like, oh, you got Austin kind of going now. What's the next step? He's like, got to get Hedges going, because that just creates more depth. And also because I know he's a big body and a big bat, but he runs really well. You've seen that in the triples. You know, he can do a couple things a little bit, more than, you know, you would necessarily expect a middle of the lineup bat. He now has a 7-game hit streak. In that 7-game hit streak, he scored in 4 of the games, and he's driven in runs in 5 of the games. So, you know, I think that's really big for them to continue to elongate the lineup a little bit more. Now, who's the next guy? Who's the next guy that they can add to Galloway and Hedges and Ryan Jackson and O'Vern? Who's the next guy that can be a consistent force for them? Carson Wells has had some good at-bats recently. Braden Dowd has been really good for them recently. Who's going to be the can provide that consistency week over week is going to be the question going forward.
Yeah, Hedges has been swinging the bat phenomenally. He had a couple triples against Washington. He hit the home run on Tuesday against UCI. And we've mentioned him and a couple other players as guys that USC needs to break back out this season, kind of get out of that slump, because they need people to show up in the middle of the order. Thought it was good to see Carson Wells get back in the lineup as he's trying to come back from a little bit of an injury. But him and Hedges are the two guys that I think USC needs to break out. And Hedges has been doing a phenomenal job of that. We said Ryan Jackson's name last week, and I think he has just continued to play good baseball. But I think you're right. Hedges is probably the most promising bat that USC has in the order right now, considering the strides that he's made since his really slow start to the year. My final three up shotgun is just piling on, or you can go.
Piling on will be part of this. Piling on Ethan Hedges. He's raised his average 63 points in the last 2 weeks. Full 2 weeks. So during that 7-game hit streak, he's raised his average 63 points. He's up to 272 now. So I think it's really big for him to be an impact bat for them. And he's only got 2 homers right now, but that's something that I think can still start to play up. You know, he's hitting the ball hard and driving it into the gaps. And you know, if he continues to do that and he's driving in some runs, then I think they got a great chance. And now you can pile on a little bit more.
Yeah, I just think that we're seeing this team over the last couple weeks put up a little bit more crooked numbers. They're building bigger leads. They're taking advantage of mistakes and making teams pay. Now, they didn't do that against Oregon this weekend, but, you know, you score the 9 runs in the first 2 innings against UCI, 17 runs against Oregon State, taking advantage of 6 errors by the Beavers, and then a 6-run rally against Fresno State to take a big lead a couple weeks ago. So I just think that we're seeing this team do a better job of taking the momentum in games and piling on to ensure that it's not a really close one at the end, which last year's team had a lot of, shotgun. If you remember, they'd get wins and they'd be up by 4. Then you're in the ninth. It's like, wait, the tying runs on third. When did this happen? And they'd still get the win, but this team is avoiding that scenario a little bit more this season.
Yeah, and the big thing for that is, well, two things for that. One is, hey, you can get some other guys some opportunities. You get a Deuce Robinson in a bat. You get, you know, Braden Dowd some at bats before he becomes a starter. You get some guys that have been struggling, Chris Brown or JT Walden. Like, you get those guys in a bat, and maybe something clicks and you get going. So that's a positive in that. But the other is that you don't tax the bullpen. You know, all those close games and all those games that, you know, they had to have their guys pitch last year, you know, their dudes, they're not having to do that as much this season. So can you keep those guys? Can you keep Blum, Martinez, Fikas? Can you keep those guys fresh down the stretch run of the season, where at times last year you saw a little bit of some fatigue with them? So I think it's really big to separate when you can like that. For three down, you know, talk about piling on. I think that's really taking advantage of opportunities, like the Oregon State game. You take advantage of that. The Oregon game that they won on Sunday was taking advantage of opportunities. They had some missed opportunities this week, and especially on Saturday. I just thought, you know, the game I was at, they had chances early to really put it on Grayson Grinsell and, you know, knock him out of the game early and force Oregon to go in their bullpen. And, you know, that helps you out for the rest of the weekend. They weren't able to do it. They had the bases loaded and they ground a ball, hit a ball hard, but two third baseman steps on it. If that ball somehow gets Byers down the line, you know, it changes the whole dynamic of the weekend, really. So that was just, and then the late innings, two runners on the seventh, two runners on the eighth. They hit into double plays in both of those. One of those, Jacob Galloway smokes, but it's right off the mound. It looks like it might go up the middle. Instead, it goes off the mound right to the shortstop. And that's just baseball for you sometimes. But then they get another opportunity in the ninth. And unfortunately, they have bases loaded and Ethan Hedges just a weak swing. And Andy Stankiewicz told me afterwards, he's like, he's got to get a better swing off than that. Like, that can't be your swing. And I believe it was a 2-1 count or a 1-0 count. It was an advantageous count and just did not have a great swing. Now, Logan Mercado is Oregon's closer, and he is an experienced guy that mixes and matches really well. So it's not a tough, I mean, it's not an easy at bat there. But for someone that's been swinging the bat so well, you want to see them, you know, get your swing off. And if you swing and go down taking a big hack, that you feel much more comfortable with that than, you know, hitting a squibber to first that the first baseman just, you know, can grab and step on first base easily. You put no pressure on the defense that way. So that was, you know, it was definitely a missed opportunity Saturday with the weather and everything else. You can't really blame them for one game, but because it was the one game I was there for is the one I'm pointing out. And Friday, you feel like is a missed opportunity, but that one, you just tip your cap to Bryce Betcher for stealing that opportunity. You know, a 3-run homer that would have put USC ahead. Instead, he robs it, and USC wasn't able to get anything else kind of going against RJ Gordon, who pitched really well for Oregon as well in that game too. So some missed opportunities. We'll see if they bounce back from it, and they did build some momentum on Sunday. Can they, you know, come back? It's going to be a tough week this week to do it with five games against four teams in, what, 6 days, I think it is. So it creates its own different challenges.
Yeah, I think that it's symbolic, too, that we're talking about this very close weekend that, you know, one, if Jacob Galloway's fly ball goes a foot further and USC can win on Friday, maybe Ethan Hedges gets one better swing off and USC can win on Saturday. That's kind of just the way that the series played out. And that shows what we were talking about, where USC was really close and you should take the 2-2 week as a positive. I don't want to dwell on the negative, but my other two, three downs, one is just strikeouts. And this kind of goes both ways, because USC is striking out a lot less of the plate, and that is a positive. It is, you know, a down number. They struck out just 6 times per game this weekend. They're striking out less than 7 times per game in conference play, which is phenomenal. But shotgun, the pitching is striking out less batters as well. And obviously strikeouts aren't everything, but it is an observation that I've had. USC had just 13 strikeouts on the hill in 3 games this weekend. They are not putting up those excessive strikeout numbers they did earlier in the year. So just something that I noticed about the way that this season is going so far as it comes to strikeouts and Pac-12 play. And then the other three down is just Friday security. And this is something we probably have to talk about. Caden Aoki, we were told, was going to pitch this weekend by Andy Stankiewicz. He did not end up throwing. And so when Caden Aoki is healthy, I think USC feels confident it has the upper hand in most any pitching matchup on Friday. And even with Tyler Stromsborg pitching well and the bullpen throwing well, I just don't think that feeling is there with Aoki ailing here in the last couple weeks.
Yeah, so we'll see if he comes back. And if he does come back, then We'll see if he gets slotted on Friday or if he, they put him somewhere else in the weekend, kind of, depending on what his pitch count is going to be and those type of things. I think that'll play into it. My other three down was consistency. And this goes towards Eric Hammond in particular, because Andy Stankiewicz said, that was the big thing they need from him. You see some good innings from him, but then you see an inning where he lets a leadoff walk. And then, in that game on Saturday, he had a leadoff walk to Jeffrey Hurd, and then a ground ball goes off the bag. And you get a bad break, and it's a hard hit ball, but it goes off the first base bag and just kind of bounces into no man's land. And that ends up being an early run for Oregon. But you eliminate that if you don't walk him, because the rest of the inning, they actually picked off the runner at second base. Nothing, they would have had no damage at all, but it's the walk. So, the consistency of being able to attack early when you come out and then USC, puts up a couple runs on and puts, I think it was, they go up 3-1 on Kevin Takeuchi's blast to left field, just destroyed a ball. And then you come out in the next inning, I think if I remember correctly, they walked somebody and that started that 4-run inning. Yeah, he walked Jeffrey Hurd again, solid single from Ensign Arrows. And then they go to Fisher Johnson and, he gives up one hit and a push bunt and suddenly you're down 4-3. So that, or 5-3, and that ended up being the final score for the whole thing. So it's finding that consistency of being able to, finding the consistency, especially when you're trying to give a shutdown inning. That was key in that game, was they were not able to get that shutdown inning right after, going up 3-1.
Yeah. And I think we can talk about three up and three down and all the positives and the negative. I just think it was good to see USC have another week where, as a net and as a whole, as an average, it was a positive week. They are still moving in the right direction, because Shotgun, we had so many weeks to start the year where we were trying to think of two positives or one positive, just because that's just the way the season went. And I think that all of our guests as of late have really echoed the same things. This group stayed together and they're moving in the right direction. And it's going to take everyone, and not everyone's going to have a positive week every week. But as a whole, I think they've done a better job playing collectively as a team and doing the right things to move in the right direction.
It's a great point. Yeah, they're definitely are playing much better baseball as far as the overall product. And, if you get Caden Aoki back, and we'll see if Bryce Martin Grzelcyk comes back, and, you've had pieces along the way, they're kind of in and out of the lineup, you get a little bit more consistency there. This team is a team that can be tough to beat in the Pac-12 tournament if they can't get themselves into at-large contention along the way. They would still at least have an opportunity there with the way they're playing. Remember, at the very beginning of Pac-12 play, we're going, are they even going to make the Pac-12 tournament? Because, the way they were playing was not much better than anyone in the conference. So, but we'll talk about what they got coming up this week. We're going to take a moment and pause, take our break. When we come back though, we got a special guest, Jack. We haven't even mentioned him. We should probably have teased this a little bit more.
Great podcasting. That's on us.
Yeah. We'll put it on social media so that who's going to talk to us before you start listening. But we got Austin O'Vern coming up, and this man hits homers. He hits triples. He also is now taking away homers. He's stealing them. He had a robbery on Sunday. Bryce Betcher he's got Jacob Galloway's back. That's what it is. After Jacob Galloway got robbed by Bryce Betcher, Austin O'Vern said, I got you, fam. And went out and robbed a home run. We'll have him on the podcast when we come back from the break.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. You know we love those 5 stars. We've got another 5-star guest with us this week. But before we get to that, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them into podcast@uscfootball.com. Just make sure you put the Dado download or the baseball pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed to Jack and I. You can even request for someone to be a future guest on the show, like our 5-star guest that we have today. We got to welcome in a man, USC center fielder, Mr. Triple himself, though, yeah, you're losing that title a little bit with some of the long balls you've been hitting this year, going over the fence instead of off the fence to where you can run for a little bit. Austin O'Vern. Austin, thanks for taking the time to join the Dado Download podcast.
Of course, of course.
Well, start with the weekend that you guys have. You're coming off a really strong week. You guys have been playing great baseball. You take 2 games for Morgan State. You don't get a chance for the third one. I'm sure you felt a ton of momentum and a chance to win them. Beat UC Irvine in the midweek, coming off a sweep of Washington. Go on the road at Oregon, and just a tightly fought series, all 3 games. They come out ahead and are able to get the series win. But you guys did salvage a game on Sunday to be able to, to get some momentum going back into this week, which will be a really big week with 5 games. But also, you jump up in the RPI, so you guys are continuing to climb your way out of the hole that you started with. What did you think about this weekend, the way you guys fought, and to come back on Sunday to be able to get that win with you making a couple big-time plays?
I mean, yes, of course, coming in through this week, we had a lot of good games, good fight. But Friday, Saturday for us was kind of brutal because I felt us as a team, we competed pretty well, and either Oregon or us could have won either of those games, but obviously Oregon ended up taking the first 2. So coming out Sunday was big for us because Stank emphasizes how Sundays you have to come out and win, no matter if you're losing the series, winning the series, or if you're tied. Just winning Sunday really shows which team cares the most. And we came out, I felt like, pretty slow for the most part, but our pitchers are what kept us in there. I mean, Watson, Ficus, X, Blum all came in shoving. I think we only had three or four hits that game on Sunday, but found a way to, have more runs than they did. So at the end of the day, that's all that matters. And getting that win under our belt was huge.
Austin, you guys have had some games this year where maybe it feels like you guys could have won or were the better team, but ended up with losses. How hard is it to stomach those where you feel like you were right there and, look up at the record as another loss?
I mean, yeah, for us, it's just a learning point, finding a way to figure out what to do better, what to change. But obviously, it's easier said than done. But as the season's been going on, I feel like we have been proven to ourselves that we can fight through it. And I feel like we have been winning those games that we ended up losing in the beginning of the season. And we still got 20 plus games to go. So finding ways to figure out how to win the close ball games is what's going to keep us in the rankings and keep us to find a way to playoffs.
You mentioned that the pitching was really good. Pitching and defense will keep you in all those tight games and make it. You make an outstanding play yesterday to rob a home run from Bryce Betcher. Two football players going at it, basically. You got an Oregon linebacker and a USC wide receiver matching up in this one, and you rob a home run from him after he had robbed one from Jacob Galloway earlier in the weekend, which was a huge play as well on Friday because it was a potential 3-run homer that would have put you guys ahead. Walk us through that play. What's that experience like? I've never been able to rob a home run. You do it in BP all the time, but in a game you don't get many opportunities. So, what's the thought process as you're racing back on it? How you find the wall? Walk us through that whole play and how are you able to make that catch?
I mean, I have never robbed a home run in a game, so
Wow.
it wasn't different. And even in practice, I haven't really maybe robbed like one homer before this weekend. So honestly, it all happened so quick. I can't even really walk you through it. But for the most part, I kind of took first step in thinking he kind of got off the end, but turns out he barreled it up. So had to redirect and just ended up putting my head down, sprinting towards the wall where I thought it was going. And just kind of looked down and saw the warning track and heard Andrew Lamb in right field yelling fence. And I didn't even really know where the wall was. And I just kind of got some momentum and just jumped and just caught it. And next thing I know, I had the ball in my glove and it was just like bang, bang. And everyone was cheering. Not everyone, actually, the Oregon fans weren't, but our team was cheering. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
What was the reception like when you got back to the dugout? Did Jacob feel like you got payback on his behalf?
He did, yeah. And Will Watson was the happiest out of everyone. Gave me a big hug right away. And yeah, the team loved it for sure. It was a good kind of shift of momentum for us.
What has been the shift in momentum for the season? I mean, you guys started out so sluggish, but we talked with Kate Aoki a few weeks back, and the guys that we've talked to, everyone says this team didn't really panic. There wasn't a fear in the dugout. Everyone stayed together, and that's always a concern. When you start out sluggish, is that people start going their own separate ways and whatnot. What was the momentum shift for you guys? What really changed things, and why has this group been able to stay together through it all so far this season?
I felt like at the beginning of the year, we thought that maybe we were going to be really good and that, oh, we're probably just going to roll teams or this and that, whatever. And obviously that backfired. And once we were 0-5 or whatever, coach emphasized no panic button, but we kind of had a sense of urgency where we're like, we got to step this up. Like, we can't stay at this pace or season's going to go downhill quick type of deal. And obviously, even from then on, it wasn't going well. And I feel like the turning point was we all kind of got together as hitters and coaches started kind of ripping us a little bit, but for a good reason, obviously, and kind of snapped us back into reality. And I feel like from there on, we've kind of been chipping away. But as of lately, I feel like we're finally actually winning games and finding the USC way. And if we keep this pace up, I feel like we're going to be ended up in a great pot in a great position.
And bringing it to you individually, I'm sure you entered the season with, inside expectations. There were a lot of outside expectations. When you start the year, I think it was 1-for-19 at the top of the lineup, and you guys are 0-5. Where was your mentality at, and what did it take to get things moving in the right direction for you?
Yeah, for me, I'm pretty try not to get mentally kind of disadvantaged. I find myself kind of at a medium at all times, even when I'm doing bad. Or if I'm lights out, I'm just kind of at the same point in my mind. But that was a turning point for me because 1-for-19 to start the season, I was like, Jesus, like I gotta fix something quick. And I didn't really fix it until though when I started to feel my swing was really Stanford. So that was all the way until Pac-12 play. So for me, it was just getting in the cage, T work, working with Big Jew, like just finding ways to figure it out. But what I've started to realize is it's more just timing. It's not really my swing because I've been late all year and finding a way to stay on time and getting my foot down early is really what's changed me and kind of pushed me in the right direction so far.
getting your foot down early, you know, has allowed you to get out, get the bat head out a little bit and, you know, drive some balls a little bit more this season as well. You know, what's went into, has there been a different approach for you to go from where you're, you know, hitting those line drives last year to getting a little bit more loft on the ball this season and, you know, driving some balls out, you know, leading the team in homers now?
Honestly, not really. I felt like during the fall a little bit, my swing was trying to go more uphill, like more backspin compared to line drives. But as the season started, I was kind of under everything and flaring stuff. So I just made an adjustment for myself, just go back to my normal swing, which what I was doing last year, and started incorporating that a little bit come Stanford. But I had my hands up a little bit. I usually rested on my shoulder. But now I've basically gone back to my exact swing from last year and somehow still hitting homers, maybe just a little bit bigger and stronger, but hopefully can throw some triples in there still.
When you make that adjustment to go back to last year, do you just look at video? Did you make a conscious adjustment that, hey, I want to go back to this? How did that process kind of play out to go back to last year's swing?
It was just a conscious decision. I felt like it's just my swing. I've had it for a long time and just finding a way to not think at the plate, because I found myself thinking sometimes about my stance, which is usually the last thing you want to think about. And I remember last year, every time I was up to bat and have a thought in my mind, I had like really no approach unless I got two strikes and I was killing it. So trying to get that back in my mind is really what I think is going to help change my season.
Yeah, I think reverting back to last year isn't the worst bet yet. You know, one of the better USC freshman seasons of all time. You know, not many players at USC get to play as many games as you did or hit as many games as you did as a freshman, you know, especially spending the fall with the football team. At what point throughout it all did you feel like and realize that you could make the impact that you eventually did?
You're saying as a freshman last year?
Yeah.
I came in thinking that, I mean, my goal obviously was to start and play center field, but I kind of realized, like, as the season begun, I had like six triples pretty quick. I don't remember how many games through, but I was like looking and I was like, it's kind of crazy. Like, it never really like kind of popped over my head that like I'm actually doing like crazy stuff. And I kind of liked that because it didn't get to my head and I just kind of stayed on the, you know, an even path and didn't let it kind of like ego, all that kind of stuff. So I started realizing it towards the end of the season, because, you know, publicity and social media was happening and Instagram and whatnot. But once the season was over, I was kind of looking back and I was like, damn, like that was good. That was great. And just kind of wanted to repeat it again this year. Obviously not going as well, but still a lot of season to play with.
You talk about that triples record. You mentioned you got out to six early. Do you look at it, you're like, wait, what is the USC record? And someone tell you that it's only 10. You go, okay, that's feasible. But it's not until about this time, you know, you mentioned you went through a triples lull, I guess is probably the best way to put it, where you're still hitting well, but not necessarily getting the triples. But then you break it against the record against UCLA or tie the record. I can't remember exactly. But what was it like when you slid in with that record-breaking triple to know that you had, you know, set a USC record in a program so prestigious like USC? And triples is not one that like, hey, the ball changes, so now more people are hitting home runs. And a lot of people are breaking home run records across the country, different aluminum bats, different triples is just something that's pretty consistent throughout the history of baseball as far as the numbers go. You know, you don't get some big spikes or dips in triples necessarily. So to break a record like that in a program that has had so many players come through it, what did that mean to you as well?
It's great. It was something that obviously I wasn't expecting to do, because growing up, I wasn't like a big triples guy or anything like that. Like even in high school, I want to say I had like five or something. Like
really?
Then just absurd. And then coming into SC, I feel like football really helped just speed-wise, because I was obviously sprinting basically every day. But just finding gaps, I mean, anytime I was in the gap, I just put my head, I didn't even look at coach. I just put my head down and ran to third. And he even said, he's like, I don't even like try and tell you what to do. If it's in the gap, I just look and react. But sliding to third for the triples record was kind of crazy, just because it was UCLA. I just remember looking up and seeing like a bunch of blue and red. And I was like, this is a pretty good game to break the record in. And just teammates giving me high fives and whatnot, it was a pretty cool moment.
Well, I think my favorite time is whenever you hit it down the left field line. That's not supposed to be, you know, a triples spot to hit the baseball, but you know, you still have the speed to get there and the speed to do a lot of things, hit homers, take them away, you know, run track, play football. In your opinion, what's the most impressive athletic feat you've ever accomplished?
I'd probably say for me, high school track, just because I never ran track before or anything, and literally just went out there and ran track, which is, I mean, I obviously practiced, but I've never went out of the blocks or ran on a track before. So doing that and making it to the state championship and all that was pretty cool and just showed that I fit in with all those guys.
Did you run, I think it was a 10.45 was your PR?
Yes. I mean,
and which is something that a lot of, you know, we're looking at all these recruits or the USC's football team is looking at, and they're like, oh, they're running 10.7. That's good. Like, now Austin's running a 10.45 over here. He can dunk a basketball and do a little bit of everything. It's not fair, Austin, is what I want to say to you, because one, I can never dunk. I can always get very close, but never could. And also my teammates used to tell me that I look like I was running in slow motion. So, I got the exact opposite of you running 10.45s. But it's so much fun to watch you. I tweeted out last year, you know, when you were going, it's just, it was must watch TV for me. So, you know, I cover these East Coast games. And then as I go back to the hotel room or whatever to do my writing, you know, I'll have the West Coast games on. And like, anytime you came on, I had to stop whatever I was doing. I'm like, all right, I'm stopping in the parking lot. I'm not doing anything. I see if Austin O'Vern is going to do something. That electricity that you bring, you know, to the game is something that stands out. Is that something that you've always kind of had? Is it something that you want to be able to provide, where you can change kind of the dynamic of a game with the things you're able to do, with the speed, with the athleticism, and whether it's laying down a bunt and beating it out, or, you know, just in different ways that you're able to do? How do you try to use your athleticism, I guess, to benefit you the best?
Yes, I feel like growing up, always just found a way to have that kind of electric feel on the base pass. Like, anytime I get on, I try just like messing with the pitcher's head a little bit, because obviously they know in the back of their mind that, oh, this kid's fast, like he might steal. So just kind of like jabbing my feet, you know, kind of faking that I'm going, and then next thing you know, I go this and that, whatever. Just finding ways to use my athleticism to the max, because sometimes baseball, you don't even get to see if the kid's athletic or not. Because baseball, that's just kind of not the sport it is. Like, basketball growing up was kind of my main sport, which I was able to show like that electricness all the time. And switching it to baseball was different, because I needed to find a way to show it as much as I could. And bringing it to college, I felt like I'm now starting to bring it more and show it. And still something I'm working on, but love the chance when I get to. Like, that robbery, that was crazy for me. I just love that.
I have a feeling when it came to the playground, you were probably close, picked to the top of, you know, tag or capture the flag. Is that true?
Yes.
And I know that athleticism is something that, you know, scouts are looking into. And I know the season's going on, but as a sophomore and, you know, with your age, you're able to be draft eligible at the end of the year. Is that something that's running through your mind at all? Something that you're, you know, considering or looking forward to? Or is it just focused on USC right now?
No, definitely just USC, but obviously it's in the back of my mind, but nothing I'm focusing on. I'm just waiting until the time comes, and it'll be a decision I'll know once the day appears.
Well, USC fans would try to tell you that, hey, you still have leverage next year too. You know, you would still be only a junior. So if you want to come back, they will not be disappointed by that. You know, one thing that made you unique is the fact that you did walk on and were a football player with Lincoln Riley. Do you miss that football? You just talked about basketball and how that was your primary sport. It sounded like there's a little love lost there. You know, I'm sure you would love to be back on the court a little bit and play. I'm sure you play some pickup and whatnot, and coaches are probably fretful every time you do. But what do you miss, about football, basketball? You miss the opportunity of being out there. I know you probably don't miss those early morning workouts that football is going through right now.
Yeah, definitely don't miss those early mornings. But at the same time, those were kind of the best, just waking up with all your buddies. I felt like made a bunch of friends pretty fast, which I wasn't expecting. So football, I still see the guys a lot of time, and I live with football players, so being able to see them and hang out with them all the time is still great. But I mean, yeah, I definitely do miss football, but at the same time, like looking back, doing both was just such a grind and balancing out, you know, other aspects of life. So it's good that I'm kind of set on my own track now and can't really see myself going back to football. So baseball seems to be the way, and hopefully I can just stick with it.
Well, you're one of two guys on the baseball team that has caught passes from Miller Moss before. What can Trojan fans expect from him in a full season as a starting quarterback?
He's going to do great. I can't wait to see what he has to do. I remember watching the game against Louisville. That was crazy. I was so happy for him because, you know, it was just kind of one time to shine, and USC was obviously looking at some other QBs in the portal because they were like, they want someone to compete with Miller. And for him to do what he did was great, record-breaking stuff, and I think he has a chance to prove, you know, the whole football world wrong.
Well, he came out for at least one of your guys' games against UCLA, was excited. He was basically just rooting for you and rooting for Deuce every time that Deuce ran to the pole to stay loose in between innings. He was heckling him, yelling down there. But you guys this week got another important week, and you know, you come off of a weekend where you're traveling, you lose the series, do get some momentum back by salvaging on Sunday. But now you have five games and you're playing four different teams and, you know, some quality teams. San Diego, I just saw them this weekend. You know, they had won 11 straight before they lost back-to-back games at the end of the weekend. You know, UC Irvine, you guys have faced them again, you know, top 15 team. And then Sacramento State and Santa Clara are two kind of undervalued teams, I think, in the Bay Area. But five games, four different teams. How do you prepare for that? And how do you stay locked in when you're, you know, you kind of, it's kind of like a tournament setting, I guess, you know, where you're just switching opponents each game as you're going through.
Basically just keeping the body and mind right for the most part. I feel like us as a team, we do a great job at that. And we have, you know, great resources to keep ourselves healthy and locked in. And I feel like once the game starts, the guys find ways to kind of snap into it. But obviously, five games in 6 days is pretty brutal. So just got to dig in deep. You just got to know that it's only a few hours. Just lock in, figure it out, because for the most part, it's going to benefit you in the long run. And just kind of finding that is really key.
Well, that's the slog that you guys might face if you make minor league baseball, major league baseball. As your season continues and you guys move forward through that 20-ish games that you guys still have, what are you looking to do to improve down the stretch, and what would be a successful finish this season for you?
For me, I just got to find more ways to get on base. I feel like anytime I get on base, someone hits me in, or I just find a way to score. It's like, I'm not even joking. It feels like every time I get on, I score. It's like the weirdest thing. And even like the coaches say that, like, you just need to get on, like, you're going to score somehow. And, you know, that's a big thing for our offense and our team, just because, not even in a selfish way, it's just going to help us win. So I got to do my best to get on base. And, you know, if I keep doing that, get on base three times a game, I feel like we're going to win majority of the game. So if we keep on that track, I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. As you go, the team goes. And, you know, Travis Jewett has told me that this season. Andy Stankiewicz has told us that you just play such a key role to getting things ignited for the offense. So we're looking to see if you can do that. You scored on the game I covered you guys this weekend on Saturday. You scored on a wet field. Real quick before we let you go, I got to ask you, how far did you slide on that? Because you didn't stop it. It felt like you just kept going. And then what was kind of your reaction when you see that play, the way it transpired? There's an overthrow from center field. The pitcher catches it and tries to throw it back to get Ryan Jackson second base, and instead throws it almost to the wall in left center. It was a crazy play, but tell me about the slide and, you know, what your reaction was when you looked up and saw the ball rolling towards the left center field fence.
Yeah, that slide, I was going full speed because center fielder was trying to gum me out, and it was just sliding late because obviously it's at home, so I can slide late. And I didn't even like, I kind of like whiplashed because I slid just like so hard, and I didn't even see the throw because I was sliding so far. I don't even like, I honestly want to see the video because I couldn't even see how far I slid, and I didn't even know, but my whole body was just completely soaked. And then I just turn around and look up, and the center fielder and left fielder are like running to the wall. Like, I had no idea what was really going on. And then I just see Jax just coming rounding third. I was like, all right, like, that's sweet. And then I came into the dugout, and the guys are like, yeah, the pitcher just threw the ball into left center, because I couldn't even see because I was like still sliding.
It was definitely an interesting day with all the rain and everything, Austin. But we really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Dado Download podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks and good luck for the rest of the season. And we'll see how much more electricity you can provide out there with some more triples, some more homers, and getting the offense going for the Trojans.
Of course, yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're now going to jump into our preview section. Let's look at what the Trojans, we've kind of been talking about it all episode. You know, it's a difficult week because you have five games against four different opponents and you're going to play, you know, in 6 days. So you got to play Tuesday and Wednesday. So that's going to be taxing on the bullpen. You got to go into the weekend. You got to prepare for different teams, the scouting reports, all that type of stuff. So it's a different challenge this week, but they're playing them all in quote unquote home of Southern California. Now they're going to play four games at Great Park. They'll play one game at UCI at Cicerone Field. But I guess technically that's been a home field.
And this time they're the road team. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So just like at LMU, where earlier this season they were the road team, but have played at home as the home team as well, they will do a little bit of everything. So this is going to be an interesting week because the two teams they play in the midweek, I think, are the two better teams than the two teams they'll play on the weekend. The two teams in the midweek are coming off of losses this past weekend. Now, San Diego, they'll play San Diego at Great Park on Tuesday. LMU, like I said earlier, is hosting Fresno State, so the page is not available. So playing San Diego, I just saw them on Friday, look phenomenal. They have this kid, Jacob Christian, who somehow no one recruited out of high school. Now he has gained a couple inches. He's added some weight. He's gotten stronger. All those type things. This kid goes to Point Loma Nazarene in San Diego, and Division II school, goes down there. And the last 2 years, I think he hit something like 44 home runs. He hit 28 homers last year while hitting over 400. Drove in like 70 something runs, just balling. So he says, "All right, I think I'm ready to take my talents to D1. I'm gonna go." He goes to Cape Cod League. He struggles. Comes into the fall, he struggles with the transition to D1 pitching. But he was banged up a little bit early in the season. I wrote about him on Friday. He has turned it on since then. He has been on fire. He's got like 15 home runs now. I would have to look at my story real quick. He added a couple home runs on Sunday after I had seen him. But he had an 11-game hit streak and 11-game RBI streak. And not coincidentally, San Diego was 11-0 in those games. Portland snapped both of those, his streaks and the win streak, on Saturday. And then Portland, which is a really good team, which I tried to tell you guys earlier in the season, was able to get the win on Sunday. Sam Sturr, the Oregon State transfer, you know, pitched really well, and they were able to win that series. So the Trojans had won 11 straight, were playing great baseball, pitching, defense, hitting. How are they going to respond now that they lost back-to-back games? I think they're going to be pretty fired up to come up here and play against a USC team. There's always that kind of little brother mentality, I think, with WCC teams whenever they play against USC, like they want to prove themselves even more. So I think a quality team is going to come up here. It's going to be a challenge for USC on Tuesday.
Yeah, and the Trojans have already lost to San Diego. That came a couple Tuesdays ago. That was, I believe, also at Page Stadium, or that was at San Diego. I forget they played UC San Diego at Page Stadium, but you know, they, San Diego hosted USC just 2 weeks ago and they won 9-3. So this is a team that USC has already lost to this season. They weren't very competitive in that one. Now USC gets them at home. And the question is, what did they learn from that first matchup? And can they really carry over their midweek success from last week to take down a team that, Chuck, and you mentioned it, is probably going to come in pretty fiery?
Yeah, I think so, and they got some quality lines. So watch out for Jacob Christian, spelled with a K, Jacob, if you want, not Jakob Portal. Portal. I don't think Jacob Christian is Polish. I believe that's what Portal was, from Utah. Utah big man that went in the first round. But Watch out for him. They have a lefty first baseman, Jack Gurevich, who's really good too, sophomore. And then Jack Costello is a guy who was down last season, but has been a big bat for them in the past and is having a good season this year. And then Ivren, I don't know exactly how, I've never asked him how he pronounces it, but it's I-V-R-A-N. So it's, there's a random R thrown in there. Ivren Romero has been one of their bullpen arms. It was really good. I think USC saw him earlier this season for a couple innings. I wouldn't be surprised if you see him. And then, if they go to Connor Thurman's numbers are ridiculous for San Diego. He's been really good. So those are a couple bullpen arms that USC could see. We'll see who San Diego starts and if USC can get out to a good start like they did. Then they'll play the team that they got out to that great start against last week in the midweek, UC Irvine. They'll go across town, across Irvine. They'll have to travel back because they have classes and stuff. So it'll be a little bit different than their normal routine of on the weekends where they go down for the weekend and stay in the hotel. I would assume they'll come back and have classes. They'll play Wednesday at UC Irvine at Cicero Owen Park. The Eaters are coming off their first, I think it's their first series loss of the season. They lose to UC San Diego, big West matchup there. Like I said, the Anteaters were 24-4 before they played USC last week. So they went 1-3 last week. They're dropping the rankings a little bit for us at D1 Baseball. They lost the series. They got beat up on Friday. They beat up UC San Diego on Saturday. The Sunday game goes into extra innings, and the winning run scores on a pop-up that's not caught. And it's like behind third base. It's kind of, it's drifting, but just a pop-up that lands like a foot inside of the foul line, and they lose that. So another team, they don't play on Tuesday. So I think it's another team is going to be coming in like wanting to prove themselves over again. So USC is going to get two really good teams that are coming off losses, and that can be dangerous. So that'll be the midweek for them before they go on the weekend. What about UC Irvine? What do you kind of think about those midweek games before we touch on the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, two things. I think both teams, you're right, have something to prove. And USC is probably catching these guys at a bad time for USC, at least. They caught UC Irvine riding high and then were able to get that win. And now UCI has a week and they get to come back. They get to return to their home ballpark. Like, well, we think we're better than this team that just blew us out. So we want to go out there and prove it on a Wednesday. And San Diego is trying to prove that, they can beat USC twice. They're trying to come off of that series loss and get a midweek win. So it'll be tough. My big question for this week is we're going to get into the weekend too, where USC's got two games against Sac State and one against Santa Clara. How is USC going to handle pitching for 5 games in 6 days, especially if Cade Naoki can't go? This is going to be a very tough week for the pitching staff.
That's a great point. These midweek games, super valuable though.
Yep.
UC Irvine, currently 20 in the RPI. San Diego, currently 30 in the RPI. So big opportunities to continue to bolster. Oregon, that they just played, remember, they played Oregon on the road. So it's actually better that they're playing UC Irvine at their park rather than Great Park, just because
not like it really matters.
It's not like it really matters. You're basically an away team anyways. But Oregon, when USC played them, was like 60. I think they're 63 now, and they're around that, hovering around the 60 mark. And USC jumped 19 spots when they got a win on Sunday. So can they get, if they get a couple wins against San Diego and UC Irvine, what can that do to their RPI helping it again? So these are big opportunities. So while this, people might look at it like, oh, you're just playing mid-majors this week, this is a huge week for USC. One, because there are big opportunities in those two games, but then you have to take care of business on the weekend against two programs that are quality programs, but don't have great RPIs. And so Santa Clara is going to come in with a 143 RPI. Sacramento State's going to come in with a 199. And you might look at it and say, okay, as long as they win the series, that's be solid, if you're just looking at it from an overview. But when you look at the RPI, you go, ooh, you lose to a 199 team. They slip down to the 200, later in the season or whatever. And like that loss looks way worse than it is. And Sacramento State is a quality team. They're hovering around 500, but that's because they lost their best players to the transfer portal. Jeffrey Hurd, who USC, just torched USC for a couple hits and whatnot over the weekend at Oregon, was playing for Sacramento State last year. Arkansas, the number one team in the nation until the rankings came out the Monday morning, because they slipped, they lost their first series of the season. They're starting shortstop from Sacramento State. Like, they have quality guys, so they've had to replace those guys with freshmen. So they went through some early season struggles. They played better recently. They actually gained 42 spots in the RPI last week. So, you know, they're a team that's going to come in. They've been playing well. They're coming off a sweep of Seattle. They also split a pair of midweeks last week with Oregon. You know, they'll play at Stanford on Tuesday before they come down to Southern California. But they're a quality program, and they have great coaches. Reggie Christensen is a great coach, doesn't get enough credit, always does really well with their pitching. They'll play them two times, and that's USC kind of has to win those games, or else their RPI is going to take a big dip because of it. And then Santa Clara is a team I was super high on early in the season. They've gone through some lulls, but they're coming off a series sweep against Pepperdine. They'll play at Cal Poly on Tuesday. They'll play, you know, Cal Poly is a team, you mentioned you were up in San Luis Obispo. Former USC coach Jason Gill is now assistant coach at Cal Poly because he played for Larry Lee at Cuesta, you know, during his playing time. So he's up there getting his first chance to coach after, you know, losing the USC job. So they're playing really well baseball, really good baseball recently too. So it's not, you can't look at it and be like, all right, if you win the midweek games, it's a good week. Like, you got to take care of business all week. And as you mentioned, five games, how is their pitching going to, how are they going to handle that with pitching? I think the positive is they've had so many guys that have shown they're capable. The Brody Purcells, the Garen Rizzos, you know, who are they going to start on Tuesday and Wednesday? It's going to be interesting. Of course, who they start on those games might depend on one, Kaden Nooki's availability, and also who they're going to start, you know, the entire weekend. You know, is Eric Hammond going to be back in the weekend rotation after, you know, his short outing against Oregon? I don't know. We'll see. So those are going to be some interesting games. It's going to be a big week for USC, even though it's not a Pac-12 week for them.
Yeah, and one of the things, Shotgun, that I thought the start of the season was really interesting was that USC really didn't play well when seeing teams for a first time. I believe, I've got to find the actual number, but there was a certain amount of their losses. Like, they were all to different teams.
The first seven or eight games?
Yeah,
I think the first seven or eight losses?
The first team to beat USC twice was Arizona, which that was well into the season at that point. I mean, you think about it. They start the season, they play three different teams in Arizona. They then come home. I think they play in midweek. Eventually, they go out to Texas where they play two different teams. Or it was TCU. It was TCU that beat them twice. But up until that point when they lost on Sunday to TCU, all of their losses came to unique teams. So I do kind of wonder if this is a group that really benefits from getting to see a team a first time and then going out and playing them a second and third time when they've kind of learned what the team is like, what their approach is like, how the pitchers attack them. It could be something we're completely reading into, but you know, they started 3-11 and a lot of those losses came to unique individual teams, which is really what they're facing this week. So I think they need to kind of buck that trend if they want to have a positive week.
Yeah, their first eight losses is the set that you gave us a couple weeks ago.
Which it's different teams. Kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, it's not unprecedented if, you know, you lose to eight different teams throughout a season because you're 30-8. Yeah. But when you're, 2-8, it's a lot different. But that was the product of playing in the early season tournaments and stuff. And, you know, we'll see what they can do this week, if that is a trend or if it's something we just completely read into. That's going to wrap it up for the show, except we do have an email this week. Jack, Kevin Smith sent one in. It's got a couple questions, and I think this is interesting. I can answer from my perspective, but also you, because you have seen Travis Mazzana as well. He said, after Travis Mazzana, who is the best college player you've seen in person this season? Now, I don't think you've seen as many players as I have, just because of me going to different games and whatnot, but I wanted to get your perspective too. Who's the best player you've seen?
Well, okay, so this is actually an interesting question, because I know that Travis Bazana is the best player that I have seen. But when it comes to their performance in front of me in person, I don't even think I'd say Travis Bazana had been the best. You know, he did hit that home run. His at-bats were phenomenal. But if you remember, in the first game of the series, he got picked off twice. In the second game of the series, he made three errors. So I know Travis Bazana is the best or the second best player in the entire country. I know he is the best player I have seen, but I don't think I saw him play like the best player I've seen. I would say it's probably one of the players at Texas A&M, and I feel like there's a couple guys that I could go with from A&M. When it comes to just, you know, pure talent and who I expect is going to end up being, when I look back, I'm like, of all these guys I saw in person, who's the best one? It might be Jace LaViolette from A&M, but when it comes to the performance that I saw in person, it was probably Braden Montgomery, and then Gavin Grahovac's a name that I want to throw out there too as a freshman. He played really well in that series. And then to throw another name in there from the Pac-12, I'd probably say Mason White, the shortstop from Arizona. He torched USC in that series. But I think if I were to narrow it down to one, it would probably be Braden Montgomery.
So I've seen Travis Pezzana twice this season. I have a different opinion of him as far as the games I've seen, because I saw him against Cal State Bakersfield and he hit two bombs, one of them like 450 or something, just absolute crush job. He was 2-for-4 in that game, 4 RBIs. He walked in it. I think he stole a base, maybe not a stolen base. And then I didn't see the full game on Saturday because I was leaving from USC Oregon because of the rain delay. I was actually hoping that the USC Oregon game would go fast and there'd be a little bit of a rain delay in Corvallis, so I get up there for the full game. Didn't get to see the whole thing, but here's his stat line from the game. He was 1-for-1. He scored a run. This game ended up being, I think, like a 3-1 game, if I'm remembering off the top of my head. But his one hit that he had was a double. He walked three times. I think he also got hit by a pitch. And he's trying to steal. I think he got thrown out the one time he's stealing. But, you know, played great defense as well. I saw, you know, he's batting 455 right now. It's all right. And then you were looking up a couple of his stats before. And what stands out to you about his stat line? I know you didn't see his best performances, but let's just look at the stat line and see where he's at right now.
Well, so we talked with Austin O'Verne off air about just how many runs he has scored this year. I believe Austin has gotten on base 57 times this season, and he has scored 39 times. So I'm like, okay, maybe he leads the Pac-12 in runs. He has soared on the stat page. Nope. Travis Pezzana has scored 56 runs to lead the Pac-12. O'Verne's in second, but Pezzana's got him by 17, and he's also walked 45 times. That is top in the Pac-12. And he leads that category by 17 as well. So his ratio isn't as good as Austin O'Verne. He's been on base, if you combine walks, hits, and hit by pitch, 105 times. And he has scored 56. So he's scoring about 50%. O'Verne's more towards that 75%. But yeah, Pezzana has been ridiculous. He is, I don't know. I don't know if he's the best player in the country this season. You know, Charlie Condon at Georgia has been phenomenal. But those two are clearly the two best players that I think are out there this year.
105 times. They played 34 games. he's basically on base three times a game. And yeah. You look at his on
and half of them are hits.
And you look at his on base percentage. He's got a .610 on base percentage. He's on base 60% of the time. His OP, he's leading the nation in walks. You mentioned his walk total. He's leading the nation in walks. His run total, you mentioned it as well. He's second in runs as far as on the national leaderboard. He's second to Charlie Condon in OPS, which is, for those who don't know, is on-base percentage plus your slugging. It means you get on base, and then when you do hit the ball, you hit it really hard. But it's not a very – it's a very tight. It's 1.695 to 1.635. So Condon is actually up to 24 homers now because Pezzana hasn't homered in the last couple games because he just keeps getting walked. Like I said, the Stanford game I was at, 1-for-1 with a double – 3 walks and a hit by pitch. He's on base 5 times in that game, but he didn't hit a homer. So people might look at it like, oh, he's falling behind Charlie Condon because Charlie Condon was way out in front early and then Pezzana kind of caught up. But, you know, it's 24 homers to 18 homers. Pezzana, as a leadoff hitter, has 45 RBIs to Condon's 52. So, yeah, those are your two front runners for Golden Spikes. You know, you could throw Jack Caglione in there just because he's, you know, two-way guy. My answer to that is – probably the pitcher that's in contention for pitcher of the year, at least right now. Chase Burns at Wake Forest was unbelievable when I saw him against Virginia. Because I was thinking about this question. I was like, oh, who have I seen? And I was like, oh, maybe Griff O'Farrell. I really like him. Shortstop at Virginia. He's really good. Super slick. He just is constantly on base as well. And I was like, oh, yeah, I saw him against Chase Burns. And Burns struck out, I think, 14 or 15 in that game. I gave up one hit. He had no hit stuff going. Yeah, one hit through that. And then I got to throw one in there for Ryan Reich for Seton Hall, who I saw him last weekend take a no-hitter into the ninth inning, two outs of the ninth inning before he gave up the no-hitter. It was a combined no-hitter, actually. He went 7 innings without giving it. I think he struck out 14 in that game. So he was really good, too. Obviously, he doesn't have the same track record as anyone else that I've seen necessarily, but Chase Burns is my answer there. So there's good discussion there, but it, yeah, those guys are USC doesn't have anyone on that level, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like Austin O'Vern, his draft stock has taken a little bit of hit this year, just because he hasn't had the consistency, and he could definitely pick that up as the season goes on. And so now there's people questioning, like, okay, will he come back? You know, won't he come back? Because he will still, he, as a draft eligible sophomore, he could still return next year and have the leverage to be signed for a big bonus. So now the question would be, the ball would be in his court of, do I think I can come back and earn myself more money, or should I just go ahead? And that'll all depend on, you know, how the rest of the season shakes out and what teams are kind of telling him as that process goes. So, you know, I told people before the season, you better get out and see Austin O'Vern because he won't be in a USC jersey again next year. But there is a possibility that happens. So we'll see how that kind of plays out. And then Kevin had another question. He said he got a survey from USC on amenities for the new stadium. He said, if you can add an amenity or a feature for the stadium, what would it be? And he said his answer is a social patio in right or left field that has standing room opportunities and alcohol that would give, you know, give students a chance to get out and mingle, and also expands the capacity for regionals. See, actually, Oregon, you know, is just up there. They have something similar to that down their right field line. So, you know, what would you like to see added to the amenity list at the new NATO field when it's built?
I will echo that one. I think that should be out there. I you know, you mentioned Cal Poly. I think they've got the Mike Kruko, mm-hmm. who's a broadcaster for the Giants. They've got his, I think it's Kruko Corner or something like that, where it's the all you can eat ticket.
Aegis Rowdy.
So you get, yep. USC needs something like that. I hope that they keep the putting green out beyond the center field fence that they have for the golf team, because I always thought that was really cool. I will say a video board. I feel like USC makes enough money. Put a video board out there that functions. They had the you know, it is a scoreboard with a screen on it, but they didn't play videos on it last year, and they've used it pretty well at Great Park this year. I think kind of as a media person, broadcaster, stuff like that, I like to see when they can, you know, throw stuff on the video board, whether that's replays or hype videos, stuff like that. USC can start from scratch. This stadium will probably be up for a while. If you don't build a video board now and the stadium is up for a while, is there just never going to be a video board? That would be kind of be the one that I think they should have. And so it's not like a weird amenity. I think that kind of needs to be there.
So now the question with the video board. So back, let's take it behind the scenes, go back. I would always complain because I'm a complainer. You know, I'm not that much, but I would always joke with coaches through the lineage of USC head coaches. It's like, when are you guys going to get a new press box? Because the press box at the old NATO field, there's nothing wrong with it, except it is the coldest place on campus for no reason.
Yeah, it's 20 degrees colder than anywhere else on USC's campus.
Makes no sense at all. But especially early in the season, those night games and stuff, the wind would somehow whip in there. And because it was a concrete slab or whatever, it would just be freezing there. So I would always joke with coaches like, oh, when are you going to get a new press box? And so Dan Hubbs said, hey, that's, you know, something we would be looking at down the line. But he said the first thing we got to do, this was after they added the food, the extra food things, they added the alcohol, you know, that was about 5 years ago now, I want to say, is that we got to get a new scoreboard. And I was like, you got a video board up there. Why would you do it? He said, we had to get it and put it in left field because with the sun coming because the sun coming in when it sets, you can't see anything on that board in right field. So that's going to be something that's interesting with the new orientation of the field. The sun's going to be setting behind the behind home plate. So it's going to suck to be a right fielder. But where are you going to put that video board that you're not going to get that sun like directly on it so that you actually see it? Because that was an issue with the old board. And maybe the technology is better than the board they had so that, you know, you can make it so it deflects the glare or something. I don't know. But we'll see if that's something that they can do there, or if it doesn't feasibly make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense to spend a bunch of money on a video board if you can't really see it because the sun's, you know, blaring down on it for 40% of your games, or even probably more than that, 60-70% of your games, depending on the time of games and whatnot. So that is an interesting one. I think the amenities are more, I think, towards the players. That's my immediate thought, is like, you need some kind of pitching lab or something like that, like that you're seeing pop up all over the place. Like, can they get, you know, super nice facilities? You know, is this going to be something that's dug into the ground so you can have some underground locker rooms and stuff like that? you know, those type of things. That's what I would be looking at. You know, a lot of the stadiums I've been to that are really nice have like what almost ubiquitously called the Omaha Room, which is, you know, players, it's like a meeting room a lot of times with super nice chairs that, you know, the coaches can go over things, but also you can go in there and watch movies and stuff and do things like that. So those type of minis, so that you can attract more players to come to USC as well because of the arms race. I think those things would be on the list as well. For the fans, I think the social patio is a great idea. I would love it if there's something, if it doesn't have to be all the way around the outfield, but Mississippi State, a Duty Noble Park, the outfield, they have, I can't remember what they're called. They're sectioned off, and it's just, that's where people tailgate, and people go out there, and people actually will show up like 6-7 hours before the game. They'll go out there and they'll bring in their alcohol. They're not supposed to bring it at that time. They'll bring in their alcohol and all their meats and start the meats cooking on the smokers and stuff. And, you know, you have these delicious barbecue and brisket and stuff, during the games and stuff. So I would love if they could somehow do something like that where, you know, you bring in and you create a tailgating atmosphere for fans. Anything that creates that atmosphere, and that's what the social deck is all about. And hey, it doesn't matter if you don't win games, but I would love to see it become a centerpiece for on campus. Nothing else is on campus. Galen Center is technically off campus. The Coliseum is off campus. No one is allowed to go to Howard Jones Field. So outside of Loker, and they don't host, track events there, make it a centerpiece of campus for your athletics. Like, I know you got some other stuff, tennis and, but also the new soccer and lacrosse field off campus technically. So like to be in the center of campus, like Dado is, make it a centerpiece that everybody on campus wants to go just to hang out. Like that would be really
cool. Yeah, whether they like baseball or not.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's the hangout spot. Like it's a Friday night. We're going to go to the 9-0 afterwards, but we're going to go over there and that's where we're going to pregame at or whatever. Like as a student, or Saturday, it's going to be a Saturday afternoon game. I'm going to go and have fun and hang out over there. I'm going to chirp at the other team. And then I'm going to go and, do whatever I do on a Saturday night on the frat row or whatever. Like that would be great to see. I don't know, how exactly they'll be able to implement it, but that would be what I would be about. That's what I would hope they would be moving towards.
Yeah. You want to lure Austin O'Vern back for not only his junior season, but maybe a senior one, just smoke some meats out in center field. You never know. It could help.
It'll get me to come out for more games for sure. Get some free food over there. But that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. I've been your host, Shotgun Spratling. We'd like to say thank you once again to Austin O'Vern for joining us. After getting back late night from Eugene, I think they got back after midnight. I got back at like 5:30 this morning. I got a different flight than they have, but we were all leaving super late last night. Also, thank you to my co-host, Jack Smith, and thank you all for taking the time to listen. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast listening platform to help us grow the show. We hope you can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.